Welcome, saints of Christian Israel and truth lovers everywhere. Actually, there really aren't that many truth lovers everywhere. There's only a few here and there, sad to say. But we are on the air, Voice of Christian Israel. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. And my usual co-host, Pastor David Martins of South Africa. How are you today?
Good evening, Pastor Eli, and good evening to all the listeners across the globe. Of course, thinking about it, Pastor, this is so enormous that not everywhere is it good evening. It is good morning in your coast,
right,
and
good night.
Other okay. parts of the is right. already good night.
That's right. That's yes, okay.
What an opportunity to participate in this program with you, Pastor, and thank you very much for having me on along with you on your show for this occasion again. I think it is now close to 4 years, mm-hmm. if not more.
It was 2014 when I visited you in South Africa and went to Blood River, et cetera, et cetera. That was quite an experience for me. And you had this American tagging along with you, asking questions for two whole weeks.
In my life, but in spite of that, we managed to get to some of the most important points where we participated in the events that were prearranged for the purpose of drawing the Boer people to the events where
Blood River
we commemorated the
yes
well we commemorated the oath, the day of the vow, in various points. Now, this is something that I think that I must mention to you, as you can recall. I mentioned it to you at the time that the Boer, not just the Boer heritage sites, but the Boer heritages like the covenant, the Day of the Covenant.
Boer heritage itself has been hijacked.
Has been hijacked
not
by
just
the Cape Dutch Afrikaners to such a large degree. I don't think that there is one Boer heritage site which is under the control of the Boers. The Afrikaners have control over every heritage site of the Boers.
Right.
And of course, it is a slow process of theirs of not just stealing the Boer heritage sites, but also stealing the Boer heritage and the, just as in the case of the Jews with the tribe of Judah, where they have taken even over the country. And they have claimed it to be theirs when it is clear that on scriptural basis that it belongs to the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin.
Right.
The two southern tribes, as well as including the 10 northern tribes which have been scattered across the globe.
Right. Well, actually, Judah and Benjamin have been scattered across the globe too. And we find Benjamin in Iceland and the wolf pack, the Benjaminites of Western Europe, who had the wolf flag, they were called the sea wolves. Okay, also in Russia, there were some Vikings that were a tribe of Benjamin. So our ancestors were never far from each other. The various tribes, most of them traveled together from the Caucasus Mountains all the way to the north and western frontiers of Europe. And then, of course, later down to Africa, right? Now, but mainly by sea, the Boer people fulfilling the prophecy that the Israelites would travel to the south.
Yes, and to the far extremes of the earth.
Yeah, right. You can't get more extreme than the Cape than Cape Town, right?
Cape of Good Hope.
Maybe Tasmania in Australia is an island south of Australia. I forget the name, but that's about as far south as you can go. Anyway, but speaking of that, I was understanding, because you took me to several cemeteries and several historical sites. And last week we were discussing the differences between the Cape Dutch Afrikaners and the Boer people. And that by taking possession of these heritage sites of the Boer people, I believe, and I think that it's your opinion also, that this is deliberate to erase the entire heritage of the Boer people as separate and distinct from the Cape Dutch Afrikaners, right? Do you think this is a conscious attempt to destroy your heritage?
Yeah. Okay. Well, Pastor, that's very evident that that is exactly what they're trying to do. You see, during this, during the 1860s, I think it was perhaps even 1856, 1857, the Cape Dutch at that time, whom were not yet known as Afrikaners, the Cape Dutch, Dutch at that time conspired with the Freemasons and the Jews that had already, to some extent, invaded the Cape of Good Hope along with these Edomite Afrikaners or the Edomite Cape Dutch.
Okay.
And their conspiracy, part of their conspiracy was not just to eradicate the Boers, but through a process of transitioning, first to incorporate the Boers, those whom survived the two Anglo-Boer Wars, which was, of course, also enticed by the Cape Dutch, but then to bring those Boers into, in part and parcel, into the Afrikanerdom,
right,
which would then eventually, through a process, eradicate all Boers, all knowledge of the Boers as a separate people, and then, of course, by forced integration, race mix with the Boers, and then to eventually arise like a phoenix out of the ashes of the remains of the Boer folk.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and here,
that is exactly what they also tried, the Ashkenazis and Khazarian Jews also tried to do with the tribe of Judah.
That's exactly right.
That is where this proto-name Jews came from, because they could not call themselves Judah, but they renamed themselves Jews so that the proto significance would remain of Judah, and then of course they could lay charge of the heritage of the tribe of Judah.
Right. Well, actually, the modern word Jew actually comes from Judean, Judeos being Judean, not Judah, okay, or Yehuda.
Yeah.
Okay, and so, but how many Christians know the difference? Right, they don't.
Exactly.
The Jews know the difference. They even admit that the Edom is in modern Jewry, right? They even admit that, okay? So in any case, let me just quickly summarize. Last week, we took the four-trekker trip from Cape Town by the Boer people, who were trying to get away from the oppression of the Cape Dutch and what we would call it, the business enterprise of the Dutch East India Company. And I would like to clarify and get your opinion. The Dutch East India Company was run by Jews. It was run by Jewish banksters. And so was the Dutch West India Company, which came to America. But they had a lot of Dutch people. Our people tend to work for Jews because Jews have all the money and they get the Jews write their paychecks, et cetera, et cetera. So this is how they could pretend. So they're not Edomites. There were some actual European Dutch involved, but they were the employees of the Dutch East India Company, which was a Jewish operation. Okay. So, in other words, their loyalty was to the Jewish banksters and not to their race. And this is why the conflict between what are today called the Afrikaners and the Boer people. Now, what kind of feedback are you getting? I know you're getting both positive and negative feedback from people by having explained the difference between the Boers and the Afrikaners, which is something kind of new for the Boer and Afrikaner people of South Africa to understand.
Yeah. Pastor, I'm trying to send you a very interesting, a beautiful article written by a lady from Netherlands. In fact, as far as I know, she used to live in South Africa, and her ex-husband was a very prominent, well, he was very prominent within the Boer community for, and he has been prominent for quite a number of years. Her name is Adriana Stuyt van Dokkum.
Okay.
And she wrote an article which is exactly with the heading of Boer, Afrikaner, or White, which are you? And I'm trying to get this article through to you, but again, for the so many of time, my I've tried opening Skype. I can't open Skype at all. Well, it does open.
Yeah,
but
you're on Skype, but no, don't do anything. Don't mess with it because we might lose our connection, right? I've been having trouble with Skype all morning.
Thing, Pastor.
Yeah.
That's a strange thing. While we were busy talking, I tried to restart Skype. I can actually shut it down and still remain talking to you.
Oh, okay. Don't mess with it. Yeah, don't touch it. Don't touch it. Okay, it's very touchy, right?
as soon as I can get this very interesting article through to you, which explains quite a bit. I don't agree with everything that she states on it.
Sure.
But there's such a lot of enlightenment that people can, by reading this article, they can be enlightened to the some of the differences, the distinct differences between the Cape Dutch Afrikaner and the Boer, because she actually gives some very clear indication as to the distinct ways in which these two groups operate, but she doesn't mention about the distinct difference in the heritage or in terms of the roots of these two groups.
Okay,
but what she also lies emphasis on is the way in which the ANC now have basically separated, like the Cape Dutch Afrikaners separated the Boers' heritage from their existence.
Yes.
And the Boers have become non-identifiable in exactly the way, same way the ANC has also removed the identity of the Afrikaners from them. So they have become whites. So they refer to them as whites. It's like a global title or a label that they have stuck to these people. By removing the term Afrikaner, they actually removing all the history from them as well. And they have become bona fide whites. Mm-hmm. Now, the whole thing is, one must always remember that the Cape Dutch Afrikaners were in political power ever since 1910.
Okay.
They have dominated the politics of South Africa. They have controlled the politics of South Africa. Yeah. And already in the 1960s, the Afrikaner politics was predominantly dominated by Freemason Afrikaners. Right.
Yes.
And it were these Freemason Afrikaners that in 1983-84 had already started implementing a plan in order to get themselves replaced by black Freemasons. In other words, they... So the Freemasons are still in control. It's just that they have passed... The white Freemasons have passed control of South Africa through to black Freemasons. And I have reason to believe that these black Freemasons are merely being puppeteered.
Oh,
they are merely puppets.
Yes, absolutely.
That are being controlled by the Freemasons from the background. That is why it was such an important thing for them to become Freemasons, because the only way in which Freemasons can control people is by making them putting them before the option, either you become a Freemason or you're a dead end.
Right.
And of
course, the same applies to blacks. Yeah, because the way it works, Freemasonry works by providing perks, special privileges, jobs, business connections, etc., to the members. And the way it works here in America, small town America, if you're not a Freemason, you get no business. Okay, you just don't get any business, right? So either join or you're on your own. Now, some people will make it on their own, some won't. Okay, well, this is the same proposition they give to blacks. Okay, so these blacks that wind up being in the ANC government are more than likely a part of a black lodge. But here, let's get back. Let's get back to this article by David Christie. And just to recap, about a final sentence of the second paragraph here, he says, it was from the Grenzbohrer, which is the border boers, the farmers who were always on the outskirts of the Cape Town society because they did not integrate well with the Cape Dutch, and they were basically farmers who wanted to live off the land. They had just left Europe to escape all the fighting there, and now all of a sudden the Cape Dutch were bringing fighting, right, and the British later fighting to the Boers again. So it's like the fighting followed them from Europe to Africa, right, to South Africa.
Yeah.
And here's what David Christie says to kind of summarize. It was from the Grenzbohrer, and a number of still Trek Boers, okay, so the Trek Boers went out first into the countryside to escape the control and manipulation of the Dutch East India Company and the Cape Dutch themselves, and that the vast majority of the four trekkers would later come from after local Boers were tired of British imperialist colonial oppression, Xhosa attacks, and constant frontier wars, and growing land shortages during what was later called the Great Trek. Okay? So, did I pronounce Xhosa correctly? I'm trying to get that click
the
in
great
there.
Great Trek.
Right.
The Xhosa.
Xhosa. I'm trying to get
takes,
that click
yes,
in there.
It takes quite a bit of practice to get to it, Pastor, because mostly people, when they try and do that thing, they...
they choke.
they Xhosa. Don't do it fluently.
No, they don't do it... Xhosa. Yes. Yeah, there you go. So, I've been practicing. Xhosa. In any case... This is the true four trekker movement here, and it's almost exclusively Boer people. Correct? There might happen to be a few Afrikaner or Cape Dutch who. Go ahead,
Pastor. The strange thing is there were more. There were no Afrikaners in the Great Trek at all.
Okay.
In the individuals who were there, they were a few Scots, and they were even British that participated in the Great Trek as well.
Okay. But no Cape Dutch. Interesting.
But not Cape Dutch.
Okay. All right. So then he says, while all this was happening among the Boer communities on the frontier, most of the white community at the Cape had remained in the Cape Colony, and that's assuming, as I was just saying, not all of the company of the Dutch East India Company were Jews. They had white employees. They had white European, probably, and we'd have to assume virtually all of these were of Israelite extraction, but they didn't know it. They forgot about it, but the Boer people never did forget their Israelite heritage. This is a huge difference between the two groups.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Pastor, after the unification, one must remember that this whole purpose of unification or this whole idea of unification falls perfectly in line with the New World Order's principle of one man, one government across the globe, one world leader. So this whole thing of unification, which was already part and parcel of the Cape Dutch's way in which they wanted to orchestrate things in Southern Africa, was in line with what was eventually to become the New World Order's agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So one can clearly see this, and that it was, if you read in the book The Origin of the Anglo-Boer War Revealed, written by C.H. Thomas, you will see that this whole agenda was to establish the whole of Africa for the Afrikaners.
Right.
And people don't realize that
With the Boer as a subjugated people. The Boer would always be a subjugated people by Afrikaners under this program. Never equals.
But also all the blacks. The blacks would also be subjugated to the Afrikaners, because the Afrikaners deemed themselves to be a super type of person. Right. And that is why you have this proto super Afrikaners. You don't talk about super Americans, do you?
Right.
You don't talk about super Brits or super English.
Right.
However, these super Afrikaners, and there are many, there are thousands of them, and they have parasited on the by subjugating the Boers. The only way in which they could have arisen was by subjugating the Boers, by stealing the Boers' heritage, by stealing the Boers' countries,
and exploiting their talents as farmers and builders, etc., but never, you know, sometimes cheating them out of their goods, sometimes, you know, creating wars in which they lose their property. This is what the Boer people have had to deal with virtually the entire history of South Africa. It's incredible. Correct. It's actually totally incredible that, and I've said this before on this show, the Boer people are the most persecuted people on the face of the earth. Their entire history proves it. Okay, and your people, the Boer people, must understand this.
By escaping prosecution and persecution in Europe, they have come to the Cape of Good Hope, and the Cape of Good Hope has become a harassment for the Boers all the way from their start, way back from 1658, 1657, 1658. When the first Freeburgers were, arrived in the Cape of Good Hope, they were already oppressed by the Cape Dutch at that time there.
Yeah, right. They came as simple Bible-believing farmers, and they would have probably spoken mainly German, and somehow the German and the the Dutch and the English got merged together and became Afrikaans. As I understand it, you know, how that language developed. But here, let's complete the thought here from David Christie. While all this was happening among the Boer communities on the frontier, most of the white community at the Cape had remained in the Cape Colony and were often known as the Cape Dutch and were loyal to the colonial powers. Underscore this, let me repeat this. These Cape Dutch were loyal to the colonial powers, not to the Boer people, and often ridiculed the frontier Boers, for whom they had little affinity, for viewing them as semi-barbaric ruffians. Whoa, that's kind of like the Irish, right?
Well, under the influence of Cecil John Rhodes, and Cecil John Rhodes had very little tolerance. In fact, he had zero tolerance for the Boers whatsoever.
Okay.
In fact, he despised the Boers. He even called the Boer woman, he called them vermin. And of course, it would take somebody with a very peculiar perception. Are you there?
Yes.
A person with a very peculiar perception on life to call the Boer women vermin. I mean, especially if one goes into the character of Cecil John Rhodes, you discover that he was homosexual. He had preference to men.
Oh, really? I didn't know that about him.
Yes.
Whoa.
So you see, Pastor, once you start digging into the true facts of history, you discover these things, which was totally ignored by the Cape Dutch Afrikaner history writers. They didn't want the people to know even that Jan Smuts was an atheist. He was a very keen scholar of Charles Darwin, the father of evolution. In fact, he took Charles Darwin's religion of evolution even one step further, and he wrote a book called Holism, at the holistic aspect of the universalism of evolution.
Right.
And these things, people don't, the Cape Dutch Afrikaners don't want to publicize these facts.
Right.
It's only when one starts digging deeper into these question marks that remain. For example, as to why did Jan Smuts behave in the way that he did? Why did he, like I mentioned on previous programs,
he was bribed.
Why did he move to Pretoria to practice as an attorney in Pretoria when he basically had it all made for him in the Cape?
Yeah, and he moved to a place that had no clients. He had no clients in Pretoria. So why did he move there? Had to be for a different reason.
Pastor, because it was part of this agenda by which they had conspired to infiltrate the Boers.
Right.
So that the Boers could declare war against Britain.
Like, we need more lawyers, right?
Yeah.
We need more lawyers.
You must remember, the Edomites always battle, or they fight wars with proxy armies.
Mm-hmm.
So the Edomite Cape Dutch Afrikaners, they did not want to enter into the war themselves. In fact, they were not just jealous about or jealous of the Boers, but they were also afraid and scared of the Boers because of course,
they were good
also
shots.
Heard about the Battle of Blood River.
Right. Yes. Yeah, yeah. And so you're saying now that the Afrikaners had absolutely nothing to do with Blood River. None of their ancestors are ever there, only the Boer people. And so what's happening in South Africa is the government, since, 1910, has been trying to erase the ethnic differences between the Boer people who were at Blood River and the Afrikaners, who were not there. In fact, the Afrikaners were the enemies of the Boer people virtually throughout the history of South Africa, correct?
Yes, absolutely, Pastor. Absolutely. Okay. So, in fact, the enmity between the Cape Dutch Afrikaners, I prefer to call them Cape Dutch Afrikaners even today. If I speak about them, I talk about the Cape Dutch Afrikaners because you cannot remove them from their history and you cannot remove them of their roots of Edomites being Edomites, and the only way in which people can be identified as that is if you use the correct name, Cape Dutch Afrikaners.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. Very good. All right. David Christie continues. The Cape Dutch, the forerunners to the Afrikaners, but you're correct. You should prefix Afrikaners always with Cape Dutch to specify their origin. The Cape Dutch often attempted to exert nominal control over the Trek Boers, notably with the establishment of the frontier towns of Swellendam and Graaf Reinet. What do you know about Graaf Reinet? What do you know about these two towns? Well, how was this done?
Boss, the one of the reasons, you can recall, I had a visit to the King of the Khoi.
Right.
Which, of course, is is one of the two tribes that formed the Khoi and the San, which the San were the Bushmen, and the Khoi were the Hottentots, or were regularly named or called the Hottentots by the Hollanders or the Cape Dutch.
All right.
And one of the things that I discussed with the king very briefly, but it was one of my discussion points that I wanted to mention to him, was that the Boers had established a republic around the town of Swellendam, which they maintained for a considerable period of time, or quite a number of years, as well as the Republic of Graaf Reinet. Now, one of the things that I haven't read up much about these two republics, but what I do know is that after Piet Retief was murdered, that
he was murdered by the Zulu, right?
That's correct. And Ngaan's impis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, when they decided that they were going to ask Andries Pretorius to take over the leadership of that particular wagon train.
Yeah, wagon train. Yeah, and lager is a camp, is an encampment. Yeah,
that's right.
At Blood River, you're talking about Blood River now.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now this was before or after the murder of Piet Retief and his men, mm-hmm. and they wanted to replace Piet Retief by, and they decided upon Andreas Pretorius, and a number of this commando actually went all the way down to Graaf Reinet, where Andreas Pretorius used to live. That's where he had a farm, and he was approached by these men, and he decided that he was not just outrightly going to pack up and go there. He decided that he was going to spend some time in prayer, and he asked for guidance and leading in mm-hmm. this particular aspect, and it came through that he should.
Yes.
And of course, he then packed up and he went up to, he joined the lager at a place where during 2013, we actually had an event there with the commemoration of the 175th year of the Great Trek. And we had a monument, a stone monument that was revealed or that was inaugurated at this particular place where Andreas Pretorius arrived, and where the people of this lager or of this group were busy at or had been washing their clothes, and this particular place was called Wasbank, washing bank, washing a point where they it's like a flat strip or flat piece where there were many rocks, flat rocks, where they, you know, that were exposed
could wash their
from
clothes.
The river.
They could wash their clothes on these rocks.
They had washed their clothes and they put these out to dry, and it was called the washing bank or the washing verge or whatever. But and as I mentioned last week's program, I actually stood where I my thoughts went back to perhaps my great-grandfather had been standing there, and he looked across the valleys and the plains, and on the right they are, or they were like hillocks.
Mm-hmm.
And he most probably, he most probably strained his eyes in looking across and trying to see what is going to happen tomorrow, knowing that they were going to move forward and not knowing what they were going to meet up with.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was quite an exhilarating experience for me to stand there mm-hmm. on the mm-hmm. bank of this river, and knowing that perhaps my great-grandfather had stood there exactly at the same spot. It was just an awesome feeling. And
he may have even washed his clothes there, right?
And knowing that was an event that actually preceded the Battle of Blood River by exactly 175 years and a number of 9 days.
Okay.
Which was awesome.
Okay. You said 175 years? I thought you were talking about...
That's right, Bob.
Okay. I missed your point. Exactly what... are you talking about landing at...
No. It was the 175th year...
Okay.
Commemoration of the Great Trek, but it wasn't 175 years that... it was actually less than that, because the Great Trek started, I think, in 1928-29, and this was... 1828-29 when they started the Great Trek, and of course by 1838. The Great Trek actually started at various points along the eastern frontier at various periods of time. There was one group that left earlier, another group that left a few years later, etc. So they moved in at different times depending on when they decided that they had enough.
Yeah, and exactly. Enough of Afrikaner oppression. We had enough, right?
And also the causes that were continually... thieving and even marauding the Boer settlements. Mm-hmm. And of course, then the British came and the British equipped the Khoisas with far superior firearms than the Boers had. And so the Boers were always at the receiving end of the bad will of the British and the Cape Dutch.
It's
just been like that.
Yeah, and of course, so, you know, when people, historians, lump the Boer people in with the Cape Dutch and the British, they're making a huge mistake, because the Boer people are not guilty of the crimes of those two groups. Absolutely not guilty.
Absolutely.
Okay. Very important to understand, you know, there are people staying in, you know, there's a lineup and they're not all Boers. They're not all Afrikaners. They're not all British. You've got to get the difference right. Okay.
But one must also not neglect the fact that many years before the first shot was fired during the first Anglo-Boer War, quite a number of years before that, the Cape Dutch, and in particular the Freemason owned media at the time,
mm-hmm.
they sent negative and not just negative
fake news, fake news,
fake news
to England
across the globe,
and
accusing the Boers of, for example, in a process of exterminating all the blacks that were in and around the Boer republics, which of course was a big lie.
Mm-hmm.
They also propagated the deception that the Boers started the Great Trek because they did not want to release their slaves.
What a lie.
And I have it on the record that so many of the Boers actually handed back their slaves to attorneys, or the Afrikaner attorneys in the Cape, in the Cape at that time. And because with the proclamation of the freedom of the slaves, the only way in which they could get their money back, you know, they buy the slaves.
Right.
The only way in which they could get their money back was to take a proof of the fact that the slaves had been released back to, and they had to take it all the way back to London, because it was only, this money was only repayable from the officers of the ministry, the particular ministry of the government of England.
That's quite an imposition. London, we talked about London that last week. It's quite an imposition, making life really difficult for the Boer people. Yeah, amazing.
Absolutely
amazing. Yeah. Well, David Christie continues. It was in those two towns, we just talked about Swellendam and Graaf Reinet, that it was in those two towns that the Boers declared their first republics in 1795, whereupon they adopted the red, white, and blue horizontal tricolor flag taken from the Batavian Republic flag, Batavia being part of the Netherlands, as I understand it. This motif would later be found in numerous other Boer Republic flags. While the orange, white, and blue horizontal tricolor flag of the Cape Dutch run VOC Cape would later find its way into the South African flag in 1927 under the prime ministership of the Cape Colony-born Cape Dutch Afrikaner J.B.M. Herzog. Who is this guy Herzog? And, you know, and so this difference between the flags, with the red, white, and blue, which of course are the same colors of America and also of France, the red, white, and blue now was changed to the orange, white, and blue. And we found that even that was changed when we went to Blood River. There was kind of a saffron. it's an orangish yellow was substituted even for the orange, white, and blue. So the only true flag of the Boer people would then be the red, white, and blue. Right? Isn't that
with the green vertical bar on the side bar?
Okay, with the green vertical bar.
Now,
okay.
Remember that the Afrikaner's flag used to be the orange, white, and blue with the flags of the province the Republic of the Boer Republic of Transvaal.
Okay.
And the Boer Republic of the Free State. Those two Boer republics, inserted. Mm-hmm. In the middle of the Afrikaner flag.
Just quickly, was the Orange Free State named after a river, or is it named after, you know, the orange, what's his name, the king of Netherlands, the orange, I forget where the word orange comes from, the orange kingdom of William of Orange. That's what it is. Okay, is it related to that, or is it related to the fact Orange River? Is it named after William of Orange?
Pastor, there are different ideas about this, and I've read some of these ideas. Some people claim that he was actually purely because of the fact that the Boer leader of the time, I've forgotten what his name was, it might have been Reitz, okay, was a Freemason of the lodge, registered at the lodge of the Prince William of Netherlands, whom was the head of the lodge of.
Okay.
So there was a Freemason connotation or connection with the decision on the name of the Republic.
Okay,
Yet there's another writings that I read that because of the particular time of the year that they crossed that river, they called it the Orange River because of the color of the water, which was very rich in iron. It had a very rusty color. So the river was orange.
I see.
And because of that, the name of the river was orange, and the country beyond the orange was called the Trans-Oranje. In other words, the on the other side of the orange. And that eventually became known as the Republic of the Orange Free State.
Okay, now where was the gold eventually discovered? Was it beyond the Orange River?
Or yes, Pastor. The gold was discovered in Langlaagte. Currently it is a suburb of Johannesburg. It was actually Johannesburg, the city center of Johannesburg, migrated from a particular location, and in Langlaagte eventually migrated to where more gold was discovered, and where the gold diggings had set a situation where the industries that were formed and their housing that was formed to accommodate the people working in these mines was located in what is presently known as Johannesburg.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Very good. So now we have this. This is really an excellent article on the ethnic differences between the Cape Dutch Afrikaners and the Boer people.
Yes.
It's a very, very concise history, and it exposes something that most white South Africans are totally unaware of, namely that these are different ethnic groups. Okay. Now he continues. Now there might be even some Boers who think that all this is in the past and that they are now all one big Afrikaner group, but this is wrong on a number of fronts. First, let's consider where the term Afrikaner came from and what purpose it served. The term Afrikaner was first loosely used in 1707 when Hendrik Bibo, a member of the local white Proto-Afrikaans-speaking community at the Cape, was in court and declared that he was an Afrikander with a D, meaning that he was an African who was no longer from Europe. During this time, all the white settlers and mixed-race persons in Africa were referred to as Afrikanders and later Afrikaners, but this was simply a geographical label as it was applied to white people in general who were born in Africa, regardless of which culture group they were part of. Okay? So, this is how the word Afrikaner developed. Okay? But you're saying, and David Christie are saying, there's more to it than that, because the Boer people never considered themselves Afrikaners until very recently. Right? And this is by deceit.
And that is also by brainwashing.
Yeah.
Continued and very successful brainwashing by the Cape Dutch Afrikaners.
Okay, right. So, but always with the view of subjugating the Boer people under the leadership of the Afrikaners and never allowing the Boer people their own land. And, of course, it was the Boer people who made the treaties with the Zulu and with the Khoi people and Xhosa people as well. I mean, how many It was never the Cape Dutch that made these agreements. It was always the Boer people, and these agreements were that they would possess the land of the Orange Free State, you know, these various territories, and it was for the Boer people, not for others.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And well, these, what we call tracts, these tracts are still available today, where even where Dungan signed the agreement that the certain tracts of land was recognized by Dungan,
mm-hmm,
and
the
also
Zulus,
by his tribal heads.
Yes. So the Zulu recognized this as Boer territory.
Exactly. And that, mm-hmm, is what was currently, or that had historically been named the Republic of Freedom, the Freedom,
right,
Republic.
Okay. Very good. Very good.
And you can recall, Pastor, we actually took a drive to Vryheid and even beyond Vryheid on the,
right,
Paul Pietersburg Road, where we visited the our good friends. Mm-hmm. Oh my!
Yeah. We did a lot of driving. I can't remember all the towns and the names.
Yes,
right. But yes, and all what I remember very vividly is the beauty of the landscape and how the landscape changed dramatically from one section to another. Kind of like California, where you can be in a lush vegetated area and then 30 minutes, an hour later, you'd be in mountains with bare rock surfaces, right?
Yeah.
And semi-desert. And then it will turn back to, you know, lush vegetation again. A really interesting geography there. Very interesting geography. I didn't find any gold while I was there, though. So this language called Afrikaans developed as as the Cape Dutch and the British and tried to label, what he's saying here is correct. It's just simply a geographical label. And so Afrikaans, the language, was picked up by the people who lived in this geography. It was not necessarily derived from the Boer language, although it would have to be to some extent because it's primarily German. It's primarily German, as I understand it. You know, correct me. Are you there? What happened?
Yes, I'm here, Pastor.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, the language that the Boers spoke was originally called Diets, D-I-E-T-S,
mm-hmm,
Diets, which sounds like Dutch or it sounds like German, Deutsch.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very close to both, but it was distinct from Dutch because in particular the Cape Dutch Dominee or the Cape Dutch minister, Dutch Reformed minister, whom is commonly known as S.J. de Tooy, Stephanus Johannes de Tooy, he could actually identify that the Boers language was different to Dutch, and he took the Boers language,
mm-hmm,
and he developed that into what was to become Afrikaans.
I see. Okay.
And out of that, of course, there was a lot of Dutch influence on the formation of words and the binding together of words, and of course there were quite a number of Malaysian slaves that had also been in the Cape, and they also contributed to some of the vocabulary of this language that was formed by S.J. de Tooy, which was to become Afrikaans. Of course, there was also a lot of influence from the Khoi and the San people. And I know, for example, that a word like, which is an Afrikaans for saucer, the cup and saucer, the Afrikaans, mm-hmm, word for the saucer is a pirang, pirang, P-I-E-R-I-N-G. However, it is the exact same word, which is pirang, comes from Malaysia as a saucer, a cup and a saucer, which is a pirang, and in Afrikaans it is a pirang.
Uh-huh.
And also if you look at the influence of Dutch on the languages which they have in Malaysia. Now, I mentioned on a previous program that I had the opportunity of visiting the world city of Malacca. You mentioned earlier that you deemed Batavia to be a part of Holland.
Yes.
Yes, but it is quite remote from Holland. The Republic of Batavia was, in fact, part of Malaysia.
Oh, wow. And oh, okay. It was a colony then.
Right on the...
It was a colony.
And but the Republic of Batavia also included parts of Indonesia, present-day Indonesia, with Jakarta being one of the major cities in that, and Malacca, as it is pronounced properly, Malacca. Mm-hmm. Myself and Bernice had the opportunity of walking in the streets of Malacca, and we spent a whole weekend there. Of course, she went shopping, and I went walking around the area to explore the tremendous. It's just tremendous to walk around in that city, and to see so many similarities with what we experience in Cape Town, South Africa, because of the VOC. The signs of the VOC are as present there as it is on the sidewalks and the pavements of
and,
Cape Town.
And VOC stands for what? Our listeners
It's for the Verenigde Oost-Indische Maatschappij, or Compagnie. Now, the V is Verenigd, or the United East Indian Company. That is what the VOC stands for.
Okay.
Of course, translated. The
so it was
United
another colony of the Cape East India Company.
That's correct.
All right, I see.
It definitely was. Okay. Of course, it was in Malacca, or the Republic of Batavia, was already inhabited by quite a number of different people with different backgrounds, because that particular part of the world is far more densely populated than Africa was. And in those days, the black Africans were still migrating southward from along the eastern verges of the African continent. So the blacks were, while they were migrating southwards, the whites the Boers were busy migrating eastward and northward along the eastern verges of the African continent. And they
ultimately ran into each other.
That's correct. Right.
Yes, that's correct. Very good.
It is very evident, just as a matter of interest, Pastor. Many people believe, or amongst the blacks, they are talking about the whites as settlers.
Okay.
In other words, as if the whites have migrated from somewhere else into Africa and they have come to establish themselves here. Mm-hmm. In exactly the same way, those blacks that had been migrating southward have also become settlers. So irrespective of how you look at it, whether you're migrating southward or you're migrating northward on unexplored or uninhabited land, you're still a settler.
And those blacks, after the apartheid regime of South Africa was in full swing, they voluntarily left their homelands and became settlers / workers in South Africa to find a better life. You know, so
they migrated to the cities and the towns.
Yeah, they're migrants. You're migrants and they're migrants.
Exactly.
Okay.
But the whole thing is, they had migrated out of the bushes into the cities, which had already been established
By the Boers, exactly. So now we've only got like 3 minutes left. So where do the Khoi people? You suggested that they were referred to as Hottentots. As I understand it, the Hottentots and the Pygmies, and to some extent the Xhosa and the Zulu, they didn't possess the land down there, but they drove their cattle in the rainy season down into the area to feed. But they never had really established a permanent presence. Is that true of the Khoi people as well and the Pygmies?
Pastor, when the first Europeans set foot on land at the Cape of Good Hope, The Hottentots were actually standing watching at these people that they have just landed. So the Hottentots were, in fact, the first inhabitants of the land.
Okay.
Irrespective of how I look at it. And they signed an agreement with the VOC.
I see.
For the use of a certain tract of land for the purpose of growing wheat and grazing cattle.
Okay.
For the replenishment of the wares or the the food on passing ships.
Right. Now, because we have to keep the ethnic differences among the blacks in mind as well, because they were always intertribal warfare among these black tribes as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean,
it doesn't matter white or black, there's all kinds of intertribal warfare going on. And you cannot simply say that the white people that descended on South Africa were the invaders and treated the blacks bad. No. That's utterly simplistic.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous to portray it that way. Your thoughts in this last minute or so?
Pastor, yes. In fact, when the whites started migrating inland, there were continued warfare waged between the various black tribes.
Yes.
And in particular, when the Afrikaners took possession of the Boer Republic's lands. After the Boers were subjugated to the Afrikaners and the Afrikaners took control of the whole of Southern Africa, which also meant that they subjugated the various black tribes in the various portions of the land. They always interfered with any enmity between the various black tribes. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know why they did that, but they
peacemakers.
Did that.
The Boer were actually peacemakers. Correct?
But they kept on interfering. And it is as typical as in exactly the same way that the Edomites today reign in Europe. And irrespective of how you look at it, the Edomites reign, for example, Angela Merkel, she's an Edomite Jew running the show in Germany and dictating, and she is forever meddling in the affairs of other countries as well. In fact, most of the other countries have begun to fear her. Even, I believe, I believe Russia's Vladimir Putin.
Right. Okay, well, we're running out of time. Let's pick this up next Sunday, okay? Thank you. Thank you very much, Pastor Martins.
Excellent, Pastor.
Okay.
Have a good evening and praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.